when a new kind of music evolved here. About the turn of the century, the Negro, freed from bondage not too many years before, gave free vent to his feelings. His music, reflecting it, had the feel of an even earlier African sound, and tempered by the French-Spanish heritage of this city, gave birth to jazz and blues.
During the age of slavery, New Orleans was the only place in the United States that allowed slaves a day off on Sunday and did not outlaw African music, dance, and religion. Slaves would congregate in Congress Square, exchanging their customs through song and dance, while preserving African and Caribbean culture. This group created the foundation for New Orleans' cross-cultural identity today. As Congress Square is known as the birthplace of jazz, New Orleans became a melting pot for musical creativity. Louis Armstrong was a pioneer of jazz and inspired other artists such as Frank Sinatra, Bing Crosby, and Peggy Lee. He made huge strides for equality and established one of the most American of music genres despite being part of a marginalized group. In exploring the New Orleans identity in jazz today on Martin Luther King Day, I have called upon the expertise of Ms. Claire Conti. Ms. Conti is the band director here at Country Day and at two Catholic schools too. She has played and sung in a wide variety of musical styles and has always had a great love for jazz. She has played with several professional bands and is also an actress. Since she founded the premier summer honor band in 1998, she continues to be a conductor and mentor for students year after year.
Hi, Ms. Conti. Sarah, where did you grow up?
In Metairie. I was born in New Orleans.
How did music, and in particular jazz, become a part of your childhood?
When I watched movies way back in the 50s, Louis Armstrong inspired me to want to be a trumpet player. The big bands of the 1940s were so prominent in so many movies, and the trumpet players were all stars to me when I was a little girl.
Did joining the jazz musician community pose any challenges to women or people of color when you were first starting out?
First of all, I attended an all-girl high school, and I started a jazz combo in there. I played in honor bands with Wynton Marsalis. Not only is he one of the most famous trumpet players in the world, but he's a member of a very prominent black family of musicians in New Orleans. And both Wynton and I studied with classical trumpet professor extraordinaire, the late George Jansen. I was fortunate enough to be asked to join my college jazz ensemble as a freshman. Then I began playing with a variety of bands after I graduated. There were very few people of color in the bands I played with, and I auditioned for a show band, got the gig, and played in a hotel in the French Quarter. I dropped out after a few weeks because the late nights made the early morning teaching very difficult. And I continued to play and sing with other bands and played with four different bands at the 1984 World Fair in New Orleans. And I also led my own band, Kanache, in the 80s and 90s. For about a year or two, that was actually an all-girl band. And we had a blast singing and playing on the Queen's Parade for the Irish Parade once. I played in a few big bands, the Montreal Balls locally, and also in Destrehand and Mississippi, believe it or not. And I also played in Dixieland and Lincoln Trucks and Slade.
Do you feel that jazz as a musical style has changed much over the years? How so?
Jazz has certainly evolved since its beginning, but it emerged from Congo Square, which is in Louis Armstrong Park as we know it today, which is just outside the French Quarter. It was the only place that slaves were allowed to gather on Sundays. They sang, danced, and played music along with some free people of color. The majority of the slaves were from Africa, but the gatherings included people from the Caribbean, Latin America, France, Spain, and many other countries who influenced the creation of this exciting musical genre.
And for an extra tidbit, Luther Gray, who is otherwise known as Bubba,
founded the Congo Square Preservation Society and will explore the idea of Congo Square as a magical place.
So that's why I think Congo Square is so pivotal, because it's not only a place where our culture continues, but it's also a place of spiritual energy. Like oftentimes the thing we pray about, the things we pray about and ask for, the intentions we have in Congo Square, they manifest. I see them coming through, like even some conversations we may have today. Someone else a half hour walked up and had an answer to the question. It's a very special place.
Wynn Marsalis said that every strand of American music comes directly from Congo Square. And that's a quote. When I think of how jazz begins, I think of ragtime piano with its jazzy rhythms. And ragtime dates back to 1890. Scott Joplin was known as the king of ragtime, and he composed 44 original ragtime pieces, including the very popular Entertainer and Maple Leaf Rag. And just prior to the turn of the century, African Americans began singing spiritual and then the blues, accompanied by usually a solo guitarist. Then in the early 1900s, Dixieland came about. Dixieland is thriving in the French Quarter today and is often referred to as traditional Dixieland jazz. It is ironic that an all-white band named the original Dixieland Jazz Band is credited with the first jazz recordings in 1917. The band existed for 80 years. I actually have a friend who played drums for the band many years later. I mean, he's probably the youngest member of the band. The New York jazz scene kind of all began in the 1920s, and the club Birdland opened in New York in 1949. About a year and a half ago, I went to New York to see three Broadway shows, and I was so lucky that I nearly ran into the club Birdland, and there was a show in about an hour and a half, and even though we were so tired, we waited around, and I got to see the drummer who in 2014 was voted the best jazz drummer in the world, since then I've listened to lots of his recordings, and I'm just fascinated by his playing. And his name is Tommy Igo. And he plays from the East Coast to the West Coast constantly. He also has a club in Los Angeles and travels back and forth on a regular basis. The big band era was in the 1930s and 40s, but many swinging big bands still exist today. Eventually in the 70s, rock merged with jazz called fusion, and it's kind of all blended together. I just feel so fortunate to live in the city where jazz was created.
What is your opinion on how jazz has created an identity for New Orleanians in terms of racial diversity?
Among our local jazz musicians, it's a good mix of races, black and white, with a good number of Asians, actually.
So recently I heard that your band class is currently playing a song called Basin Street Blues. Could you expand about why you adopted Louis Armstrong's version where the lyrics referring to separate, quote, black and white folks are united under one word?
Sure. The song has been recorded by so many renowned artists with a variety of lyrics. We actually chose an Ella Fitzgerald lyric, Where the Best Folks Meet, in an effort to keep it totally upbeat and positive instead of offensive. Thank you.
Thank you, Simran. I really appreciate your asking me to do the interview, and what a great topic. You did a terrific job putting the questions together. Thank you so much.
According to a quote by Pops Foster in the book Louis Armstrong's New Orleans by Thomas Brothers, quote, the downtown boys, the Creoles, thought they were better than anybody else and wouldn't hire uptown boys.
They were able to do this because of their Creole heritage granting them white skin. People like Louis Armstrong stated that as a, quote, dark-skinned cat, which is another word for man, wouldn't dare to peep into their exclusive club. Even though Louis Armstrong was black, he was radical in his emergence into the jazz community because of his darker skin. Slavery created a culture of tension between those with relatively lighter skin versus relatively darker skin in the United States. This phenomenon of internalized racism put Armstrong on the toughest path to his dream, and he managed to succeed.
In an August 1991 commemorative article on Armstrong's career, the New York Times stated, "The power of his genius, combined with his living manner, forced whites to rethink their racism, whether they knew it or not." Louis Armstrong, a giant who helped shape New Orleans and America.